So we're grateful. Well, happy all those men. Wonderful, good. Everybody's like there's just a joy about you. And like I said, about mountains, tops, valleys, it's all good. God is at work, and that's why we're here today to celebrate that. We're going to start a little mini series today. It's called Conflicted. And it's going to be a three-part series we're going to walk through in the scriptures. But to just start us off, I want you to imagine with me three different scenarios. Okay, are you ready? Okay, so I want you to place yourself, imagine, take this in. Okay, we're going to have pictures there to help you do that. So, okay, first scenario, number one. For the third time in a row, a good friend bails on you when you're supposed to get together. Third time in a row. And you said, not only that, you said no to other plans, and then you're hoping that they would come and they'd be able to get together with them, and then all of a sudden you get this message from them, you get a call, you get a text, and lo and behold, they can't make it again. And this is kind of third time here. Every time is filled with your feelings being hurt, you're frustrated, maybe a little bit even more so than annoyed. And so you do want to talk about it with this friend, but you're not sure if the relationship is even worth it. You picture that. You feel that. Okay, how about situation number two? You're newly married, and your new mother-in-law just happens to drop by unannounced all the time. And you try dropping seemingly obvious cues to them, but they don't seem to be getting it. And you know that talking about it can be really awkward, especially after what happened at Christmas. You can open a can of worms. What do you do? Okay, and how about situation number three? You're at a meeting at work. A brand new idea is shared by your boss, and everybody is nodding their heads, absolutely, but you don't agree. In fact, you think it's going to be the worst decision that your business or company or your organization can make. And pretty soon, your boss is about to move on to the next topic, and you want to speak about it, but you're kind of nervous, and you don't want to seem like negative, the only negative voice in the midst. But you're really afraid that you all are going to have some serious regrets moving forward. Now, I want you to think, what would you have done in each of those situations? What would you have done? And so that's where we're beginning today in the series called Conflict. And I think it's a really important series, though it's very simple. Because I think when it comes to conflict, we definitely overcomplicate things. We overcomplicate things. It's a simple series we're going to talk about that I think can impact our relationships, maybe how you experience your spouse, your parents, your in-laws, your friends, your family, your coworkers. But I want to say at the outset, it's very simple on paper. It's very simple to speak about or talk about it, but doing it is much, much harder than you think. Is that true? I mean, the real truth is that all of us at some point struggle with conflict. And there was a study that was done several years ago that a group of researchers went to some movie theaters and they conducted this experiment involving cutting in line. And beforehand, before the experiment took place, they took people aside that were pulling into the lot at these movie theaters, and they interviewed them and asked them, what would you do if someone cut in line as you're waiting to get your tickets? And people said, the majority said, oh, I would never let anybody do that. I would say something. And so the researchers decided to test it. And you know what they found out? Not one person said or did anything when people cut in line. And of course, that might seem like a really small thing, right? But then they interviewed the people after the situation, and they all said the same thing. They said it didn't seem like it was worth saying anything. It wasn't a big deal. They said saying something might make the situation a lot worse. You don't know who has a gun these days, so you should stay silent. And you know, you all get that. But the surprising thing is that the same body of researchers went on and they found that even increasingly dangerous, wrong, and risky situations, people remained silent. They remain silent. That our tendency to avoid conflict is just like so strongly ingrained or embedded in us. But the thing is, it seems like Jesus knew this was true about us too. See, Jesus knew that if followers of Jesus and his followers were to live differently, then how we deal with conflict also has to be different too. That dealing with conflict isn't just a practical thing, it's actually a spiritual thing. It's a spiritual thing. In a world where we have difficulty with conflict, and we have so many weird, admittedly, and toxic relationships with people, Jesus wants us to be different, to be different, to act different, that our relationships would look different, feel different, that our relationships would be characterized by things like grace and love and respect. And thus, we need to approach conflict differently. So Jesus offers his disciples a teaching about conflict that's recorded in Matthew chapter 18. And maybe you've heard these verses preached on before or read them in a Bible study. If you grew up in church, by the way, you might know this as the famous or the infamous passage on dealing with discipline in the church. But I actually think that Matthew 18 is speaking much broader to our relationships. And that asks us to follow Jesus, if you've chosen to follow Jesus, to act and respond differently. And so we're going to read the same section, the same chapter, each week during this series. And we're going to listen to these words. So this comes from Matthew chapter 18, verses 15 to 20. We'll have it on the screen. It's also in your worship guide if you want to follow along and take notes there. So Jesus says this: if your brother or sister sins against you, go and point out their fault just between the two of you. If they listen to you, you have won them over. But if they will not listen, take one or two others along so that every matter may be established by the testimony of two or three witnesses. If they still refuse to listen, tell it to the church. And if they refuse to listen, and even to the church, treat them as if you would a pagan or a tax collector. Truly I tell you, whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loose in heaven. Again, truly I tell you that if two of you on earth agree about anything they ask for, it will be done for them by my Father in heaven. For where two or three gather in my name, there I am. So just pause here. Now, when I first read that, like, it may seem like a little weird or strange, but I think overall Jesus is giving some practical principles for conflict in our life. That Jesus knew the success of having healthy relationships depends on figuring this out and addressing and working through conflict together. So over this series, we're going to look at like three principles that I think arise from this passage. We're going to unpack a different one each week. And the first principle is have the conversation. The second is check the reality. And the third is know your outcome. So each week we're going to unpack a different part of this. And we're going to start, of course, with part one, have the conversation, the first one. Meaning that if someone sins against you, and specific there, sins against you, wrongs you, then Jesus wants us to go to them and to talk to them. And it seems simple, right? It's like so simple, but over and over again. Aren't you amazed at like how difficult that is? It's like we're hardwired not to do so, to do the opposite. But what we are hardwired to do is really to behave otherwise. And we kind of have a default, right? Maybe you can catch yourself in one of these. The reactions to conflict of flight, fight, or freeze. That's the scientists who discovered these reactions, not just in us, but in animals as well. But our flight response, you know, which is kind of obvious, you know, are you an escaper? There's like a hint of conflict, run the other direction, like a cheetah, right? You leave. Or maybe you just like avoid the person altogether. Or you cut them off, you run away. That's kind of the flight response, is to get away as fast, as far as you can. Others of us tend to have a freeze response. It means that we don't do anything. We do nothing. Kind of like what the researchers found out. Like somebody cuts in line, just stand there, like don't address it. You know, that you watch people misbehave or act out or do very sinful things or things that bother us, but you think it's just not worth rocking the boat, that you dismiss it, you let it go, you say things like, that's the way it is. Or, hey, I'm helpless, I can't change it, I can't do anything, I can't be a part of it. That's kind of it's kind of the freeze response. But then, and there's the fight response. From us are fighters, right? We're fighters. And it might seem like from the surface, right, that the fighters are at least dealing with it, right? Or at least stepping into it. But the thing is, they're really not. The fighting often happens when we let pile up over time resentment and grievances until we lose it. And then we just blow up on the person. You spill out how long I've hated you all along, every way, for millions and millions of years, right? And every little thing that's gone wrong, and so what happens with them both, you know this, like, it just totally destroys the relationship. You know, and I'm sure one of those, at least one of them, maybe sounds familiar. Maybe you're in different circumstances. That's kind of like each and one of us has a kind of default reaction. But to do it the way that Jesus tells us, though, therefore tells us that it's not natural. It's not natural that we need to learn and be intentional about our responses and about our reactions. And of course, that prayer is involved in that too. And if you don't have time to pray before responding, then you need to remove yourself before responding. See, if we trust Jesus in those things, then we can find that it can actually transform our relationships and respond in how He desires us to. And so we're going to look at that today and have the conversation. That's the first piece, is Jesus says, I want you to go and have a conversation. Jesus' way of dealing with conflict starts off with saying, have a conversation. And it sounds simple, but once again, so difficult, isn't it? I know for myself, so hard to do. But I want to remind you here that it's supposed to be a conversation. It's a conversation, not an attack. Not trying to get one up somebody else. You know, unlike the options above, Jesus is saying, well, it's not avoiding, it's not running away, it's not fighting, and it's not freezing, but it's talking. You know, and we have to recognize too that 2,000 years ago, you know, we have phones now, we have computers, we have tablets, we have lots and lots of ways and apps to communicate with one another. So no, Jesus did not have texting. Jesus did not have Messenger. Jesus did not have Snapchat. Wouldn't that have been neat, though? No, but Jesus did not have email. He didn't even have a telephone, even with the wire connected, or having to go like this when you're dialing. He didn't have any of that at all. So, and many times, that's how we often approach to conflict, don't we, right? And it's easy to think, like, okay, well, those things count. Right? Those things count as conversation, but I don't think that's the answer. See, I think the first thing that Jesus is saying here, what he's alluding to, is the value of that face-to-face, real-life conversation. And I think you and I have learned over time that you will say things or not say things to somebody's face differently than you would behind a screen. It's true that having a face-to-face, real-life conversation is so much more valuable, so much more powerful, so much more meaningful. Because texting or emailing or Snapchatting or even a phone call is way, way different. There's a book I highly recommend, by the way, if you're interested in diving into this more. We're going to put out some book recommendations during this series. It's called Fierce Conversation by Susan Scott. And it's a great book just talking about some of these very difficult things. And the author, she claims that when we make time for having these conversations, these very hard conversations, the results in the long term can actually be incredible things. That we shape our relationships by the conversations we do or we do not have. That's her claim. We shape all of our relationships by the conversations we do or we do not. And that's the first piece. And that's what Jesus talks about, is first have a conversation, meaning talk. Not argue, not yell, talk. Face-to-face conversation. But the second piece that he mentions is that it's also with the right person. Have a conversation with the right person. So who is that? Who is the right person? Well, when you're frustrated, the right person is not your mama. It's not your other friend. It's not the coworker. Or going over their heads to the supervisor, or going to their spouse. It's not some third party. It's the right person. It's the person you're experiencing disagreement with, the person who has wronged you. That's what Jesus points out specifically, the person who has wronged you. person, you disagree with the person who has wronged you. And think about, like, have you ever wondered, like, it's just, like, why it's so hard for us, you know, myself included in that? You know, it's so much easier to talk to mama, and talk to my coworker, and talk to even my small group member, or talk to my friend, or talk to those people. And I've had many situations, and if you're a supervisor, you work with a boss, but you probably had these things, too, that someone comes to talk to you about someone, about the thing that someone did to them. And every single time my response that I'll say to them, and I'll ask them the question, have you talked to them yet? Have you talked to them directly? Before you just like tell me all the bad things that they did and how long, have you talked to them? And I'd say 9 out of 10 times, you know what the answer is?
No.
Why don't we? Well, I think we don't, because don't you know, this is, you come up with like a million reasons why it's going to turn out badly. It's a lot easier to get the ear of someone that you know is going to say, yeah, they're awful, he's bad, she's awful, like, he did that to, like, it's all those things. But in your head, you're going to go 100 reasons why it's going to turn out badly. It's not worth it if you go to that person. You know, psychologists say that when it comes to thinking about having a difficult conversation with someone, first, we overestimate the cost of saying something. We overestimate the cost of saying something. But second, we underestimate the cost of not saying something. We underestimate the cost of not saying something. And you know what I mean? Like, it often blows up in the end when we avoid those things. You know, we underestimate the long-term cost of staying silent. We underestimate the damage, the long-term damage that it can cause. And just here's an example of that. Maybe if you are serving in your role at work or have in the past or a coordinator in some capacity, maybe you have someone that you're overseeing, an employee who is a great, fantastic employee, does a great job. But you notice they leave early a lot. They leave early a lot. And they're on their phone a lot, doing whatever, texting, calling, those types of things. And you as the boss, you decide they're such a great employee. I'm not going to say anything, even if they leave early, even if I catch them that they're on their phone a lot. I don't want to lose them. You tend to drop hints in a meeting, in a staff meeting or a group meeting, but you don't go directly to that person because you don't want to rock the boat. Well, then fast forward 2 months later, you have 3 employees who are doing the exact same thing. But starting with 1 person is a problem now with 4 to 5 people who are leaving early and using their phones a lot on the job. And the thing is, it makes sense. It's a bigger cost in the long term by not having a conversation with that right person. So that's what Jesus is getting to, is that when we're responding, when we're looking at conflict, it's having a conversation with the right person. And the final principle is to be direct. Talk directly. Talk directly about what is wrong. And Jesus is pretty blunt here. In verse 15, he says, point out their fault. If your brother or sister sins against you, go and point out their fault. Which means they may not know it. Seriously. They may not be thinking about it. That might be normal to them in their upbringing or what they expect people to do. Or, you know, and the same idea, though, is crucial that for us, it's not beating around the bush or hinting at it, but it's honesty and transparency. And our classic mistake, and I do this all the time, is we usually take an Oreo approach. You know what I'm talking about? An Oreo approach. It's often also called a compliment sandwich. It's like, hey, I want to talk, like, have a conversation, and hey, sit down. You're like, you're so fantastic. Like, I love you. Oh, I love what you're wearing. Like, oh, yeah, you did a great job on that thing. But then, you know what? You said that really awful thing to him the other day, and it really hurt my feelings and whatever. And then, oh, you know, that project is really going great. Like, it's a compliment sandwich, right? Something nice. And then you kind of slip in the problem, what's happening, and then you end in the nice way. If you've ever been on the receiving end of that, it's absolutely horrible. Especially when you're invited to talk about it. You're just waiting, like, what am I going to say? What is the point? What is the thing? Just tell me. Not meanly, but directly. Be direct about it.
And that's as simple as it is, that's where we need to start. Is doing the uncomfortable thing, but directly stating, hey, this is what took place. This is how I'm feeling about that. This is where it's getting, this is what's wrong about it. This is where you wronged me or underdressed me. Like, to say that right away. And that's the thing, it's doing the uncomfortable thing, having the conversation with the right person about the thing that's wrong. And you may be fearful. Maybe fearful that you're going to screw things up. But by and large, time and time again, that's a myth. Because once again, in the long scheme of things, in the long game, it's considering the long game of things, it's actually for the better. And when we can listen to Jesus on this advice here, not just advice, but his expectations for us as followers of Christ, as of us that follow Christ, this is an expectation of Jesus, it's an expectation for us as the church, it can actually transform us. It can transform our relationships and us from the inside out. So as we finish today, I have two questions for you. Is that okay? I have two questions that is kind of like your homework a bit. And I believe they're also listed in the worship guide there. So if you forget, they're going to be on the screen, but they're also printed there for you. So the first question is, what is one conversation you've been avoiding making excuses? What's one conversation that you've been, the freeze or the flight, what that you have not had? And I want you to just take some time this week, maybe this afternoon, sometime later, just to take some time to name it and to give some thought and prayer around why you've been avoiding it. And also why avoiding it, how avoiding it maybe has been costing you. It's been costing you time and energy and sleepless nights. But also maybe costing you something in the long run. But then question number two, what could be different if you had that conversation? What could be different? But here's the pause, though. What I'm not saying is I'm not saying to motor ahead and have the conversation. You're doing these two things and you're stopping. You're stopping because you need to allow God to do some work in you. I'm not saying, you know, all of a sudden I get back next week, you're like, Pastor Chris, I did those two things and I approached her and then everything up and now my life is horrible, whatever. No. Pastor Chris is saying, what's a conversation and what could be different if you had it or something there? Because next week, we're going to look at a second principle that comes out of this passage, and that principle is check your reality. It's important to check our reality. You might be surprised to know this, but sometimes your view of reality is not actually reality. It's filtered. It's tainted. It may be different. And that's where we're going to talk about where others can help us with different perspectives. These questions, I think, are important. Put us on a path to maybe possibly reconciliation or moving forward. And I do have to say, the relationships that I've had moving through and walking through conflict together on the other side have been stronger, more powerful, and more valuable. So today, what conversation you've been avoiding? How might things be different if you have that conversation? So we're going to trust that God is in the business of redeeming and building his kingdom here, one person. One conversation, one relationship at a time.